Hey, and welcome back to the South Carolina Lead. Ooh, new season, new vibe, new intro music. Hashtag smooth news.
Yeah, right, as if.
Ah, listen to that sweet, sweet intro music. How bad did you miss that? Welcome back to the real South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of September 11th, 2018. Well, it's after Labor Day, which in an election year means races start to heat up again. Let's catch you up on where the governor's race is and where these next 8 weeks may take us. Also, a lot has happened with SCE&G since our last podcast in June, and the $1,000 question still lingers. And just a note, I hope you remembered, but we're celebrating our silver anniversary with this episode. That's right, 25 episodes in and going strong, thanks to you, our dear leaders. So, where's my present? The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections while you keep telling people about how pumped you are that football is back. Yes, I know. Or while you feverishly buy milk and bread instead of non-perishables ahead of Hurricane Florence. Be safe, be smart, people. Know your zone. And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here at the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, South Carolina will soon feel the effects of Hurricane Florence. The strengthening hurricane is expected to become a Category 4 storm and is forecast to make landfall later this week. Where remains the question? Current models suggest Wilmington, North Carolina, but a lot can happen. Governor Henry McMaster declared a state of emergency on Saturday for South Carolina and preemptively requested a federal emergency declaration from the federal government. Stay with SCE-TV, South Carolina Public Radio, and SCEMD for the latest information on this storm. Number two, the Post and Courier reports that Statehouse Corruption Probe Prosecutor David Pascal wants a judge to release a grand jury report that exposes vulnerabilities in state ethics laws. He added that releasing the report would end public speculation about this investigation that has gone after a House Speaker and two former House Majority Leaders. The probe ensnared six Republican legislators and the Columbia firm Richard Quinn and Associates. Two former lawmakers still face charges involving misconduct in office, conspiracy, and perjury charges. Number three, the South Carolina Radio Network reports that more than three dozen school districts will receive grant money to help them put armed officers at currently unprotected schools. However, 300 schools statewide still lack a law enforcement presence. The State Department of Education announced that 38 school districts will receive part of the $2 million set aside in this year's budget for SROs. The agency said districts were chosen based mostly on their index of tax-paying ability, with districts that have lower tax bases getting priority. Number four, the Associated Press reports that Amazon has ordered 20,000 Mercedes-Benz vans for its new delivery program, in which contractors around the country can launch businesses that deliver packages for the online retailer. The full order of 20,000 vans, which will be built at the new Mercedes-Benz plant in North Charleston, should be on the road in the next year. Just like the Bulldogs buried the Gamecocks on Saturday, we in solidarity have also buried the Lead.
Ka-ka!
Well, we're back with two of our top contributors to the Lead last season, and they're back this season. We're excited to have the Post and Courier's Jamie Lovegrove and Andy Brown to give us an update on where things stand in the governor's race and the current situation involving SCE&G, the failed VC Summer nuclear project, and Dominion Energy's planned purchase of SCANA, SCE&G's parent company. Guys, welcome back.
It is so good to be back, Gavin. I did not know what to do with myself over the summer. Incredible. I was just sitting in Rockaways by myself, waiting with nothing to listen to every Tuesday morning when I woke up.
I'm beyond words right now. I'm so choked up. Andy?
What month is it? I've been gone for a week.
yeah.
The past week has been spent hanging out with some cows on a farm, so it's nice to be back in the presence of other human beings.
Welcome back. And yeah, and Jamie was just on the road too in the big cities of Washington and New York. Guys, we ended last season with y'all, and now here we are kicking off the second season, talking with similar topics. Big surprise right there. But we want to start off right now with Jamie talking about the governor's race. It's after Labor Day. Things are heating up. The summer was a little quiet, obviously, because that's how things go after primaries. So, Jamie, tell us where we are right now. We're 8 weeks away from the general election in November. What's the current state of play with James Smith, the Democrat, in this race, and Governor Henry McMaster, the Republican, in this race?
Yeah, so this is the time of year when you do typically start to see the campaigns ramp up after Labor Day. It's when voters start to pay a little bit more attention. You know, we are, I think, going to get a bit of a delay here because of impending Hurricane Florence, mm-hmm. And that should, you know, likely push things off for a while. It could well become part of the campaign for all we know. We'll see how that develops. But it seems the stage that we are in this campaign and that the major point that both campaigns are trying to do is really about defining James Smith. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know who Governor Henry McMaster is. He has north of 90% name ID in South Carolina. He's been in politics for decades in high-profile roles and is obviously the incumbent. James Smith, even though he's also been in politics for decades, he's been in the State House for 22 years, he is much lower name ID. You know, in his internal poll a couple weeks ago, he had 42% name ID. There was an RGA poll. The Republican Governors Association had a little higher, 55% or so. But that means that the point is that the room here for both campaigns is to define James Smith. Of course, the James Smith campaign is talking about a lot about his veteran status. They had their first sort of digital ad last week. I don't know if it'll go on TV, but a minute-long ad that was really focused on it was sort of a cinematic retelling of his wife waiting for, you know, the call about his status in combat situations. The McMaster campaign is certainly trying to paint him as just another liberal politician. And they have been going up. You might expect an incumbent in a safe red state like this to stay away from attacks at this early stage in a campaign unless their backs are against the wall. Mm-hmm. But they have been pretty happy to go on offense against James Smith and try to attack him for some of his past votes in those 22 years in the legislature. Mm-hmm. So it's really about who is James Smith.
Yeah.
And that's what the campaigns are fighting over right now.
Well, we just saw some recent polling data come out, too, that Garen Hart Yang firm poll with a representative sampling of South Carolina voters in early August found that McMaster had 47%, Smith with 43%, about 10% undecided.
And that poll was paid for by the Smith campaign,
okay.
Should be noted.
Worth noting.
Yeah.
And then there's also RGA poll, Republican Governors Association poll, which skews more towards McMaster, 52% versus Smith, 41%. And we just want to get your thought on what these polls mean so early in the race and if that's indicative of what we could see happening in November at all.
Vince Shaheen in 2010 only lost to Nikki Haley by 3-4%. So we know that it is possible for a Democrat to get that close in South Carolina. It shouldn't be stunning to see that result from Smith. You know, the reason they found it particularly encouraging was, again, because of the fact that folks didn't know who he was, they sort of did a secondary poll where they would inform voters with positive
background,
positive descriptions about both of them. So for Governor McMaster, they would say he is a proven conservative leader. He stands with President Trump. He's going to fight back against liberals who are trying to change South Carolina values. And then for Smith, they really focused on this very centrist appeal message that he's a guy who's going to work across party lines, and he's demonstrated a willingness to do that during his time in the legislature, that he's going to focus on the right solutions for South Carolina. And when they gave those two descriptions, Smith actually took a 5% lead. So that was really encouraging for them, and that told them that if they can get their message across, then they have a real shot. The problem is that that's going to be difficult because, you know, we haven't seen fundraising numbers from either of these campaigns for a while. We still have a little bit until the next fundraising deadline. We'll see some new numbers. But one would expect that Governor McMaster is going to have a lot of resources. He has a deep network of donors cultivated over many years. You know, Republicans are not going to take South Carolina for granted. And so it is going to be, in a lot of ways, in the home stretch as we get there, about who can get their message out the most. And it's going to be difficult for Democrats to keep up with that.
And Jamie, we've talked in the past about Smith's campaign and having gone through a couple campaign managers. Now we're going through some communications mm-hmm. staff changes over the summer. Was that indicative of anything? Like, is it the campaign stable is what you've seen or heard? Or what?
It has seemed to stabilize. His new campaign manager, Scott Hogan, has come in, you know, somewhat of a campaign vet, has been in a lot of different states at a lot of different Democratic campaigns, worked on Hillary's campaign in 2016. Hillary Clinton's campaign, and it certainly makes it a little more challenging to have a lot of turnover, you know, over the course of campaign, because you want to make sure you're keeping a consistent message. And for James Smith, I know that has been a big focus of his to make sure that through the primary, through the general, he is sticking to the same message. But, you know, it does seem like both sides at this point have figured out what their game plan is. The question is just at this point, how effective will it be?
Mm-hmm. And are we getting is this race getting that national kind of attention that we're seeing in maybe, I mean, other states like Georgia and Florida mm-hmm. for different reasons down there than there are up here? But any reason or any radar?
It has not. And for, you know, for both sides, you can look at that in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess traditionally you would want, as the Democrat trying to upset the Republican, more attention to be on the race because you want Democratic donors who are a finite resource around the country to be giving more money to your campaign than to Beto O'Rourke in Texas or to Stacey Abrams in Georgia, to these other underdog campaigns that seem to be getting a fair amount more attention. At the same time, you don't want to awaken Republican donors and Republican activists into, you know, realizing that this could be a real fight and coming to Governor McMaster's side. So, no, it has not really gotten the national attention yet. I'll be curious to see if folks do start paying a little bit more attention to it at some point. But you look at the map and there are races where it does seem like Republicans are a little more vulnerable in other red states. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, incumbent on the Smith campaign, of course, to prove that South Carolina can join those ranks.
I mean, is that even a surprise, though, in a year where Congress is up for grabs, that the attention just isn't going to be on governorships this year?
Yeah,
I don't think.
Although, again, it has been on some other governorships more than this one.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think the other aspect of it, too, is that South Carolina's demographics have not shifted as much as some of these other states all have. We don't have quite the extent to, in Texas, for example, where there's just a massive, massive Hispanic voting bloc that does not turn out at elections historically, and the question every single election is, will they turn out this time? And mm-hmm. if they do, Democrats can absolutely win that state. You don't have that really in South Carolina. What you've got to do in South Carolina is what the Smith campaign is trying to do, which is, yes, turn out more Democratic voters than you would typically see, but you're going to have to win over some independent swing voters, the mythical swing voters that I've talked to some of them. They are out there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the question is, can you get enough of them to close the margin that we've seen in the last couple decades in South Carolina?
Just really quick, we do have want to get to Andy really quick, too. But your thoughts on what we might see with this potential Hurricane Florence coming through? Obviously, the governor's gone through a natural disaster before last year with Hurricane Irma. No big hiccups there. A lot of this stuff is pretty well orchestrated in South Carolina since we've had so many storms before. But we have talked about James Smith as a major in the South Carolina National Guard. So mm-hmm. he could be activated by the governor,
could
which
be.
Could make an interesting little dynamic
interesting.
Right there.
You know, for Governor McMaster, this is an important week. He needs to seem like he is on top of everything. He needs to give very clear directions. He needs to be very decisive when it comes to evacuations. You know, it's delicate territory for a political opponent. You know, I do not expect James Smith to go about attacking McMaster for the way that he handles this, but people will notice the way McMaster handles it regardless of what James says. So, you know, it is important for McMaster to – this is a high-profile moment for him to demonstrate that he is an effective governor and that he can lead in high-pressure situations.
And now to pivot to a cash money issue affecting many of our listeners and this host alike. Andy, fill us in on VC Summer News.
The way I would phrase it is all of the bluster of the legislature finally came to pass, and they actually passed something in, what was it, June? I'm losing track of time here.
I've lost all track of the calendar.
It was a 15% cut to people's mm-hmm. power bills. The full cost of VC Summer currently or previously made up around 18% of people's bills. And so it wasn't a small cut, and people saw their bills drop in August. And they also got a rebate for the 15% of the power that they purchased from April to July of this year. You know, a lot of people were posting on social media, I saw, about the savings that they were getting on their power bills and for August, and saying how it was the lowest they've had since they've had service with SCE&G. So it's interesting to see the dynamic of people recognizing what a, you know, 15% cut to their power bills would look like. And it's almost a teaser of sorts now, because it's not permanent. And we're going into a very tightly contested legal hearings come November, in which SCANA and SCE&G are going to argue that they should be able to continue to charge for these failed nuclear reactors up in Fairfield County. And in doing so, should be able to merge with Dominion and charge customers around, it's over $3 billion in the next 20 years for these reactors. So it's setting the stage for what is looking to be very, very interesting legal hearings in the Public Service Commission of South Carolina. So
we're not just only focusing on those two, but we're also looking at finally Santee Cooper and the future of Santee Cooper. There's a legislative committee that met recently. The governor's on that committee. We know that he wants to sell that state-owned utility, was partner with SCE&G on the failed project. What's going on with that people need to know about?
Oh, man, it is. It's like...
Take a break.
We are at step one again in the legislative process. You know, the legislature largely focused on the majority owner of VC Summer, which was SCANA and SCE&G last session. What took a back seat was state-owned Santee Cooper, which was a 45% owner of the failed nuclear reactors. They have $4 billion in debt from the nuclear reactors, another $4 billion in debt from earlier projects and just, you know, operating costs. And so we have a utility that's leveraged with over $8 billion in debt that the state government is now tasked with trying to figure out a path forward for. Santee Cooper's customers can expect to see their bills increase in the coming years to pay off that debt. There's no other place for Santee Cooper to get money. And so the governor and a panel of lawmakers are now trying to figure out how to rectify that situation and, you know, get the best benefit for customers. Obviously, Henry McMaster has said since last summer that he wants to sell it. He wants to find a utility maybe in Florida or Georgia or some of the country's essentially largest electric utilities to possibly buy Santee Cooper. Now, that's not an easy task. It may seem easy. You know, the average person would say, well, just sell it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And it may have seemed easy to the. I mean, I'll just say I remember asking Governor McMaster about this time a year ago, what's your timetable here? When do you want to sell it? He said, I'd like to have an offer on the table for the legislature when they start the session in January. Mm-hmm. So that was, what, like 8-9 months ago?
Yeah.
So, you know, it is difficult. And, you know, we've seen interest from, you know, rumored interest from NextEra, as you're referring to, in Florida. Mm-hmm. Southern, as you're referring to, in Georgia.
I mean, all that debt doesn't make you look very attractive.
It does not.
Well, I mean, but what is attractive to these utilities, right, is the customers that this utility serves.
Guaranteed customers.
Yeah. They have, I forget how many, a couple hundred thousand, maybe over 100,000 direct customers for Santee Cooper. But then you have over a million customers in the 20 electric cooperatives that Santee Cooper provides power to. That's the true value in all of this. And so if these private utilities can find a way to get a sweet deal out of this, they will take it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the tough thing, right, is because then you still have lakes that Santee Cooper owns in South Carolina. You still have economic deals that Santee Cooper set up to bring businesses here. It's not as simple, not to mention that if you take the $8 billion in debt that Santee Cooper currently owns and you privatize that, it is immediately taxable, meaning you're adding even more to that bill. And that is, I've talked to analysts on Wall Street who look at public utilities, and they've said that is the hardest part. Getting a company to bite in which they have to take over debt and then immediately pay over probably $1 billion in taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That is not an easy prospect.
And Governor McMaster has explicitly said, again, I asked him this about a year ago, that he is not willing to keep any of that $8 billion debt. He has said explicitly, we are not willing to keep any of that debt. So it's kind of hard to walk back from that negotiating position.
Yeah.
You know, the co-ops in South Carolina are involved as well. They see the ability to essentially, utilities should be able to come in and make offers for what they want on Santee Cooper's platter. Do they want their power plants? Do they want their power lines? Do they want their direct customer base? Do they not want the lakes? Do they want this or that? And that's tough. That's what the co-ops want. You know, Santee Cooper is saying legally there are some restrictions on what they're able to sever off and slice off of their huge pie of an electric utility here in South Carolina.
One just really quick to switch gears really to look into the SCANA and Dominion merger that was approved by SCANA shareholders in July. Where do we go now? What's the next step? Where's my money, Andy Brown? Where's my $1,000 check?
Where's your $1,000 check? This is the very interesting thing that's going on right now. SCANA is in a huge legal battle with the state's Office of Regulatory Staff, which is the state utility watchdog. And this is getting very heated. There are, right now, there are depositions flying everywhere. Literally all of the top executives of SCANA, including the former CEO and former vice president, are being deposed for these lawsuits and this legal challenge. A former accountant on the project who alleged essentially investor fraud on the executives has already been deposed and is set to be deposed again from what I hear. All of this is meshing with a ratepayer lawsuits in state court. Mm-hmm. Evidence is being shared. It's kind of SCANA's worst nightmare. Mm-hmm. I don't think it should be understated that this is the biggest utility issue that has ever been handled in South Carolina.
If not one of the biggest economic issues.
And not just South Carolina. I've talked to people who, investment analysts who focus on the utility industry solely, and they have said this may be the biggest the biggest utility issue in the country's history.
Wow. It's
especially because the precedent
you don't think of it. I mean, nuclear reactors were canceled in the 70s and 80s, but they were not nearly $9 billion. And customers at that point had not been paying for them already. So this is a massive issue, not just for SCANA and SE&G. You can bet there are utilities around the country watching what happens
100%.
Here.
I mean, the thing with the Dominion deal that I would just mention here, too, is, you know, the big question is really for them because, you know, they certainly were at least implying or hinting that if the temporary rate was reduced, that they would walk away.
Yeah.
It was reduced. The court stood it up, you know, held it up, and they didn't walk away. They said, we're going to just keep monitoring the situation. You know, the question really is if the PSC does reduce the rate permanently, whether or not Dominion is serious about walking away. This is still an attractive property for a lot of reasons. We're talking about all those customers.
It's over 700,000 customers that are locked in. They can't get their power from anywhere else.
You could take a pretty, you know, the deal that they are currently looking at is an incredible deal by any you know, estimation. Mm-hmm. But you could certainly imagine a deal with reduced rates that would still look pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question is going to be whether or not Dominion actually walks away. And if they do, whether or not somebody else comes in. And I would expect somebody would.
And that is something that we're going to be continuing to watch with both of you all this fall upcoming as we see a lot of things coming down the pipe. We're glad to be back. We're glad to have you guys back on the podcast talking about these great stories.
I feel so rejuvenated.
Jamie, that's makes my heart warm. You know, just like that Crown Royal that I had to smuggle in to that USC game over the weekend.
I can't believe you did not realize that.
I was not informed.
Not
I mean, I knew
SEC
that,
stadiums.
But I knew that, but I didn't maybe realize how it would affect me upon being there for extended time.
How'd that game turn out for South Carolina? Sorry.
Wrong podcast.
It's all right. The Steelers tied with the Browns this weekend.
Yeah, that is
womp, womp, womp.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Gavin.
Goodbye.
Well, it's time to get back on the old dusty, rather I should say blustery, campaign trail. Ooh, missed that sound. I know you did too. A little withdrawal. Well, let's bring you back up to speed regarding statewide political campaign activity with some new campaign trail bites for you. Democratic gubernatorial candidate James Smith just launched his first ad after Labor Day. It's narrated by his wife Kirkland and serves as an introduction to voters, playing up Smith's military experience. The ad mentions how he answered the call of his president, which at the time was George W. Bush, and then shows a brief video of him from Ground Zero. Now expect more campaign ads, OBS, as we heat up this campaign season. Also, speaking of, an ad by State Solutions, a Republican Governors Association-affiliated political action committee, say that three times fast, or PAC, launched an ad that plays audio of Smith saying that he supports raising taxes. Smith said the audio was of him supporting the 12-cent gas tax increase to fix state roads that lawmakers passed last year. Now, you might remember that Governor Henry McMaster vetoed that legislation, but it was soon overturned by the House and Senate. And something else to keep your eye on, Representative Jim Clyburn, the only Democrat in South Carolina's congressional district, was campaigning in Kansas City, last weekend. The McClatchy Washington Bureau reported that Clyburn was campaigning with Democrats in the Kansas 2nd and 3rd congressional districts in hopes of flipping them blue. The third-ranking House Democrat has also said he'd run for House Speaker if Democrats take control in November and if Nancy Pelosi doesn't have the votes. And stick with us, you whip crackheads, as we continue to ride the campaign trail off into November, that sunset, that sweet November sunset. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And it's a new season, which means we have all new questions from South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney, who is back with some more state trivia. Russ, thanks for returning.
Thanks. My pleasure.
I have yet to answer a question correctly, but this is season two. We're all new people. I'm really hoping my luck will change. But I know a lot of people out there are also in the same boat as me, and we struggle together.
Well, for the new season, we'll go a little easier.
Fire away, Russ.
Okay, here we go. Since we're a lot of focus, I guess, for the next month or so on the governor's race mm-hmm. and the governor's office, maybe we'll start right there. And did you know that there have only been 20 Americans who have been elected mayor of their hometown, governor of their state, and elected to represent the U.S. Senate from their state? Only 20 Americans. One of those 20 was or is a South Carolinian. Okay? Ready to go?
Yeah, I think so.
20 Americans have been elected mayor, governor, U.S. senator. One was or is a South Carolinian. So the question is, who? A, Burnett Maybank. B, Strom Thurmond. C, Donald Russell. D, Ernest Fritz Hollings.
You know, I want to say Fritz Hollings, but I don't think he was mayor. Is Maybank, Thurmond, Fritz, and who was else?
Donald Russell.
I can't speak to other guys. I'm not enjoying this. Thurmond?
That's your choice, Strom Thurmond.
Yeah.
Okay, the correct answer is A, Burnett Maybank. Maybank was elected mayor of Charleston in 1931. He was elected governor in 1938 and elected to the U.S. Senate in 1941. And an interesting footnote, he died in office in 1954 after winning the Democratic primary for renomination to the U.S. Senate. That is the year that Strom Thurmond, 1954, was elected to the U.S. Senate on a write-in campaign.
Neat, Russ. This is all very neat. I really appreciate it, Russ. And as always, we look forward to more gubernatorial history and trivia going forward. And, of course, your insightful questions, which I can't deny, are also very good. I mean, you can't beat these good questions. And I hope everyone else out there also is playing along, too. Let us know how you did. Send us a tweet at scleadpod. Or send us an email at sclead@scetv.org. Thank you, Russ.
You're welcome.
So mad. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and tune in to This Week in South Carolina on SCETV. That's where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV Friday at 7:30 p.m. or Sunday at 11:30 a.m. And you can see my face. All of that, this podcast and more is available on SCETV's super easy to use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, on your Android, on Google Podcasts, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at @SCLEDEPOD, where you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at @SCLEDEPOD. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Caitlin Park is our social media consultant. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on September 10th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Stranger Things is just a Goosebumps ripoff.
The Crowb!
The Crowb!